I'd like to thank you both for your interest in the inquiry and for your appearance at today's hearing. The purpose of this hearing is to assist me in gathering evidence for the Climate Health WA inquiry into the impacts of climate change on health in Western Australia. My name is Taran Wiramantri and I've been appointed by the Chief Health Officer to undertake the inquiry. Beside me is Dr. Sarah Joyce, the inquiry's project director. If everyone could please be aware that the use of mobile phones and other recording devices is not permitted in this room, but please make sure that your phone is on silent or switched off. This hearing is a formal procedure convened under Section 231 of the Public Health Act 2016. While you are not being asked to give your evidence under oath or affirmation, it is important you understand that there are penalties under the Act for knowingly providing a response or information that is false or misleading. This is a public hearing and a transcript of your evidence will be made for the public record. If you wish to make a confidential statement during today's proceedings, you should request that that part of your evidence be taken in private. You've previously been provided with the inquiry's terms of reference and information on giving evidence to the inquiry. Before we begin, do you have any questions about today's hearing?
No.
For the transcript, could I ask each of you to state your name and the capacity in which you are here today? And I could also request that throughout the hearing, you briefly state your name prior to speaking.
So I'm Joel Boyle, and currently the Chief Executive of Pathways.
And I'm Dustin Hall. I'm a haematologist with Pathways, and I guess my main representation here will be as the chair of the Pathways Environmental Management System Working Group.
Mr. Boyle, would you like to make a brief opening statement?
Yes, thanks very much. I'm delighted to be here. Take part in the inquiry. I do think it's a tremendous opportunity, as some of the questions point to. Personally, I've worked in many countries internationally, UK, Middle East, United States, and lastly here in Australia. And I do feel that this is an area where Australia, perhaps health in Australia specifically, is lagging. And I think there's a real opportunity to get some momentum into this space as quickly as possible. I think this inquiry, this sustainable health review, and the work that's spinning off that are all fantastic opportunities to provide a real kickstart, if I can call it that, to the work that will no doubt follow from the inquiry's findings. So I really welcome the opportunity to be part of that.
Thank you. And certainly other witnesses to the inquiry and through the written submissions would support that. I don't think anyone in the health sector in WA thinks we're leading in the space at the moment, but there certainly is an opportunity to build some momentum and fairly quickly, and that does, and there is a great support for that. So, establishment of this inquiry was a specific recommendation of the Sustainable Health Review, which also made separate recommendations for the health system to reduce its environmental footprint as a matter of priority and begin transparent public reporting on its footprint by July 2020. How do you see the issue of climate change connecting to ideas of sustainability more broadly, and in which areas relevant to your work could the health sector progress more quickly? You mentioned that broadly, but is there anything specifically you think we could make some headway on?
I mean, I think that the two are sort of really strongly interlinked, and I think people probably struggle in the terminology with, you know, when climate change, sustainability, energy preservation, whatever that topic is, it's not quite sure of what umbrella to or terminology. But I do think they're very closely linked, and in many ways it can be all the same thing depending on how you define it. I do think there's, as we said in the opening statement, an opportunity. I know from my own work on the Sustainable Health Programme that you know, all of these recommendations and the strategies are gradually beginning to get some analysis, some definitions, some work programmes, very early stages, but you know, so therefore I think that will be a key driver, and I know The team involved in that are very much looking forward to the findings of this review and use that very much as a template for to help going forward as well. I think just the fact that we're now talking about it and these pieces of work now exist. I would have to say up until the last couple of months in my year as chief executive, the discussions around the environment have been minimal to zero, and certainly in my internal work within PathWest, very close to zero as well, as other priorities or other work has taken precedence. But it's not been part of the internal systems in any shape or form, in the way that you would talk about the quality system, and you would come across that, on a day-to-day basis in terms of safety and quality. I think in Europe, environment comes close, behind that regularly in discussions internally at corporate boardrooms, and that simply hasn't been the case here. So I think in a number of areas, establishing our own committee is the first step for us to start to do some self-analysis as to where we are in this space and what priorities we can set for ourselves, as well as those that come out of the broader reviews. And Dustin's been doing some sort of initial work and pulling some thoughts together in that space. So yeah, I think just tremendous opportunity. And I think because we're in such a relatively low base start, it'll be really, I think we can achieve real momentum quite quickly.
And I'd certainly taken that. Since the formation of the Climate Health Inquiry, then expressions of interest amongst the organisation, putting the working group together, and there's internal mail that goes around about the fact that we're starting to do this, it's been quite surprising and really pleasant how many staff members have come up and sort of said, oh, this is great, this is happening. Great to see that you're on it. How can I be a part of it? Any organisational change, I think often a major obstacle will be, getting staff motivation, right? It's already done. I mean, they want it. They want it to happen. So I think the opportunity is there in terms of provide them a framework with which to do something about it, and they'll be very happy to be a part of it. We were just talking yesterday about, I think at the moment, having only just formed things like these work groups, that staff members want it, they want to see their workplace doing it, they want to contribute to it. However, at the moment, they don't really feel empowered, not that they're obstructed, they just don't have an avenue to do anything about it at the moment. And so I think from a leadership perspective, from the Department of Health and then leadership within organisations, if we can provide them that framework to do something about it, I think they'll wholeheartedly embrace it. So there's an opportunity to do that, and more than just the workplace, the public wants it. Everyone's very much front and centre in their minds these days, and so I think a great opportunity. And as Joe was saying before, in terms of accelerating what we're doing about it, unfortunately, the reality is up until now we haven't been really doing much about it at all. So to move forward, we can do a lot very quickly now. So. And secondly, just on that first point as well, I think also that thankfully people understand a lot now that minimising our environmental footprint needn't necessarily be a costly venture. I think there was a view not so long ago that that would cost a lot of money to do, whereas I think that there would be initiatives that would certainly cost, but there'd be a lot of other initiatives that would be quick gains, won't take a lot, wouldn't cost a lot, and fairly quickly would save money, I think. So. We referenced that, I think, in our submission that the Royal College of Pathologists Australia Quality Assessment Program has published a bit of stuff over the last couple of years now on their work in that space and showing actual significant cost savings through sustainability measures. So, the models are there in their infancy, and it won't take much to get it up and going, I think.
And I take your point about the struggle with terminology. And I think issues like sustainability, emissions, waste, climate, they do get talked about. Yeah. And certainly we struggle with that as well in the inquiry. Having said that, I don't think we'll ever get to a point of absolute definitional clarity, and I don't think you need that.
Yeah.
But part of what you're saying as well is that we need to build a conversational culture, which is part of the enabling environment. So if people like yourself are talking about this, even the difficulties and struggles that you're having with it, that then creates a conversational environment where staff feel encouraged to, you know, put forward ideas, etc.
Yeah.
So I do think that's important, and what you're saying about the shift is vital, and your kind of leadership in this space will be critical to success of the organisation.
Yeah, I think as well, it's interesting. Pathways is probably a little bit different. You know, there's an industrial element to Pathways in the sense of the way we run laboratories. We use a lot of chemicals and reagents, and you know, there is a sort of, as I say, factory industrial sort of aspect to the whole thing. And you know, looking across our organisation, our understanding of waste. And what happens to the waste, and is the waste, you know, should it be generated? Is it generated appropriately? And what happens to it, you know, and how do we manage the supply chain? I mean, these are all questions that people haven't even asked. And so I think, you know, I feel in particular that the Pathways can really get their head around this, because we only have to, you know, we can learn very quickly from best practice around the world, and just incorporate the culture and deal with some of the very basic questions, is like, you know, how do we measure waste? What happens to it? Are we taking responsibility for that, etc.? And, you know, we use a lot of power and energy just and water just in the processes that we work through. So, again, nobody's really got their head around that and sort of challenged it or questioned it, and that's why I'm sort of very sort of keen to get on with it. You know, I'm very excited about the opportunity.
And you could end up being a leader in the space yourself within a relatively short time.
That I think the plan. As I think about it, the fact that I have come from Europe, and I do have a lot of people who've been specialists in this place, you know, that I think there's a real ability to connect and get some really quick wins, just get the organisation really having a leadership around environmental work and sustainable work. So I'm optimistic that we can. And we're a smaller organisation as well, you know, and it's self-contained to some extent. So I think we have a less complex sort of structure to sort of manage change through, so that should help as well.
You say you're a small organisation, but you've also got an incredible number of sites across this state, and you've put that into your written submission, but would you just like to state for the record something around the scope of your organisation and its footprint in this space?
Yeah, well, we have around just over 2,000 people. We have, I can't remember the exact numbers in the submission, but we have 26 or so laboratories, a number of 50-odd collection centres. We have two major hubs, metropolitan hubs in Fiona Stanley and in QE2. So we cover, you know, the entire regional network. In terms of other parts of our business, it's obviously challenging for us to deal with the volume that comes through the metropolitan hospitals, and then the logistical challenges of running pathology services across the state very much. So we're very, very close to the other health service providers and Country Health in particular when it comes to managing those regional logistic challenges that we have as well, in terms of staffing, call-outs, having the right services in the right place, getting the balance of that correct. But yeah, we are the state provider for the whole system, it really does break down into those large metropolitan hubs, and then there's a significant number of smaller regional laboratories.
The geographic distances,
sorry,
I think.
I could ask you just for the record, just so we get the audio transcript right for you. If you just wouldn't mind just saying your name.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So Dustin Hall. Yeah, I think the geographic distances that WA faces, with some of the laboratories spread out all over the state, brings with it its own challenges, but probably some opportunities for technological innovation, I think, in that space as well, in terms of things like digital pathology, trying to look at models around minimisation of transportation costs. Those are sort of areas where, while challenging, may actually offer opportunities for significant gains in terms of both fiscal as well as environmental footprints, you know, sustainability. So it would, in some ways, the models could have substantial benefits in terms of that sort of thing. So I think a big stretched out organisation comes with some opportunities as well. And we were just talking this morning about some opportunities that are, the technology is getting there just now, actually, with digital pathology options as well. So, for example, things like digital scanning of blood films or digital incorporations of some other pathology things, which would then hopefully start to reduce needs for transportation of those samples around the state and things. And I think, which is already happening within the organisation, but opportunities for innovation grants in this space would be excellent, I think, where they then end up serving all sustainability goals, reducing environmental footprint while also improving patient turnaround times for results and improving financial sustainability as well.
And you might be interested in listening to the evidence that the Director General of Health just gave, which then is supportive of that kind of approach. So that'll be interesting to tie those things together. The Minister for Health wrote to area health service provider boards in April this year, encouraging membership of the Global Green Healthy Hospitals Network, which is an international community of hospitals and health services dedicated to reducing their ecological footprint. And also the chairs or deputy chairs and the chief executives have come and given evidence of inquiry. All of the area health service providers have given written submissions as well. I'm just wondering whether you've noticed any greater focus on these issues in your interaction with area health service providers in the last few months, or is that something that might come later?
So, Joe Boyle, I'd have to say no, not yet. The forums that I've been involved with, and there is a question later that talks about our interaction with HSPs and how this space perhaps has got a bit of momentum in it. But in terms of that particular initiative and how the HSPs are maybe beginning to mobilise themselves around that work, it's not really been visible to me yet, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I found when we were putting the submission together and then forming the group, trying to find literature out there and examples of frameworks to work with and things like that, I must confess I didn't even come across it actually until this question came up. Subsequently, having a look at it, I think it's a great initiative. Like all things, if you can find a framework with which to work around to help you start, I think it's also, I love their idea as well, where they've got this 10-point sustainability goals, but they sort of say, when you're saying you're going to be a part of this, pick two, and how are you going to focus on that? I think that's a great idea, and just slowly plug away. And we were talking about that the other day, about how, you know, one at a time moving through them. I work at Fiona Stanley Hospital and a number of regional hospitals, and I'm on the medical executive board there and a couple other boards as well. I haven't heard it mentioned. I was not aware of it before this submission, actually, which is a bit of a shame. I think just more broadly as well, when interacting with other health service providers, and we'll talk about a little bit later with supply chains and things like that as well, a lot of organisations are starting to get together a environmental policy, but I think it'll be important to how we, when we move forward, are they actually doing anything with that? Has someone written a document and stuck it on their webpage? There needs to be something behind those words. I'm sorry, my name's Dustin Hall.
Thanks, Dustin. And I think it's important to be realistic about where people are at, but also that this inquiry is given an opportunity for people to trigger conversations.
Yeah.
And people, you know, the area health service providers may not themselves be aware that PathWest has such an interest as you have expressed this morning.
Mm.
And by people expressing this interest publicly and then connecting up later, you build a conversation.
Yeah.
And we'll certainly make some recommendations in the inquiry about ways to sustain a conversation, including having kind of meetings in this state, which brings the members of the Global Green Healthy Hospitals Network together,
yes.
also private providers, also PathWest, you know, also whoever else should be part of that conversation,
yeah.
And as a follow-up to the inquiry. You have mentioned already that you see procurement and the broader supply chain as an area where PathWest can make some improvements. Are you able to outline any further what opportunities you see for PathWest to pursue greener purchasing or procurement policy?
Again, I think it's an open landscape, because while we do have a state that there's some disclosures within our sort of tendering process in terms of evaluation or incorporating environmental sustainability preferences into the evaluations, that they're either very weak or non-existent, and therefore in the selection of vendors, I don't believe that particular theme or issue has really been properly probed. And again, you're dealing often with large international companies who are relatively advanced in some of these, and you do have an ability to potentially identify the ones who are greener than others, and can contribute to our own organisation in a more constructive way. So I think we need to, because PathWest on an operating basis is like, I guess, much of health is we have a lot of people, and then we buy a lot of things to deliver the services, be it reagents or equipment and consumables, and we have a tremendous opportunity to make sure that we are driving back into our supply chain and learning from that supply chain how best we can improve our sustainability sort of culture and ultimately select suppliers who have got stronger sustainability credentials. And again, a little bit what we talk about internally to date, I don't think that conversation or challenge has been going on. And I think we can incorporate that in broader state procurement, in health procurement, and in local PathWest procurement, and make it a stronger part of the whole evaluation criteria. And again, just learning from my European experiences, that is quite often a significant part of much procurement that goes on in Europe, which scores quite highly in the evaluation scoring metrics as to how well suppliers have responded and offering options that will improve the environmental footprint.
We've also heard from Health Supply Services Chief Executive, and they're also very keen to do more in this space, and they're looking at their policies and their practices. To what degree does PathWest rely on HSS for, you know, its policy parameters and or specifics in terms of purchasing, or do you run separately?
So it's both, you know, so for lots of consumable type procurement, they have catalogue items, you know, that we will buy based on HSS's catalogues, and therefore their procurement and bulk purchasing and all that is very much, we rely very heavily on them. So their policies will be important for a part of our procurement. There's another part of our procurement which is very specific to us, you know, especially around reagents and the chemicals used in the laboratory processes. And depending on the scale of the procurement, we do then obviously coordinate with HSS and ultimately Treasury in decision making and process. But I think between us all, the criteria has got to be lined up so that we have a consistent approach. So it's a real mixed bag procurement between stuff that we drive locally, stuff that's driven through HSS, and stuff that goes all the way up to Treasury for oversight.
And Dustin Hall, the sort of only learning myself how these structures sort of work, but recently learning about the HSS structure and the way that we order things through them. I think, again, that actually offers quite a good opportunity, really, to essentially enforce environmentally appropriate purchasing policies and and this is a tiny example, but there's no reason why we could just remove styrofoam cups off that list, why we couldn't change paper to recycled paper, things like that. And maybe they're not completely prohibited from accessing, but there is a separate, more complicated system to access items that are deemed more to have a more significant environmental footprint type sort of thing. So that would be a great opportunity there. And even if they didn't wish to do it, we were talking about yesterday that we would somehow work with HSS to have essentially a separate PathWest inventory that the branch laboratories and things can order from, sort of emphasising our desire for there to be environmentally appropriate items on that list, where recycled paper or things like that where appropriate and whatnot, or just removing styrofoam cups and plastic cups from the inventory list and things. And then secondly, when we're looking at equipment to purchase for ourselves, then it would be then for more upon PathWest to more thoroughly assess the environmental credentials of the equipment that we're purchasing. And again, I don't know quite yet how we would do this, but I would really like to see more than just, okay, we're going to purchase this piece of equipment from this company that has an environmental policy. Okay, what are you actually doing about that? What are your environmental credentials? Why are we reassured that this is the appropriate path to take? And hopefully as a statewide health service, we can harness and leverage on that kind of buying power to demand this of suppliers, taking back packaging, using environmentally friendly packaging, reusing that packaging, and appropriate waste disposal.
I think there'd be really fantastic potential in a further conversation between yourselves and HSS,
yeah,
given that your values, as expressed to the inquiry, are very similar, where you want to get to. I think there's a clear potential to do more between the two of you, as well as with the area health service providers. The other point I'd make is, and also both of you bring that international, both chief executives bring that international experience to their view of what's happening in Western Australia, which again I think is useful. But the other point is around the evaluation criteria. So this is not something that I am particularly expert in, but hearing from people who are experts, it seems to be that the policy frameworks or procurement frameworks are generally facilitatory if you wish to purchase using environmental criteria as part of the criteria. So there's nothing particular that says you can't, but the expression of that by various health service providers can either include a self-assessment of environmental capability by the providers or tenderers, but not necessarily include that in the weighting criteria that are used to decide whether they get the contract.
Yeah.
So it might be that they have to do some kind of self-assessment, they have to tell you what their environmental credentials are, but it's not actually in the criteria, and then if it is in the criteria, it may not necessarily be weighted.
Yeah.
So there's a number of ways that you could potentially tweak this system if you wish to get different outcomes.
Yeah, Joel Boyle. Absolutely. It's that there's nothing stopping you in terms of developing your ratings and your criteria. There's a fair degree of license and putting that together, but it typically doesn't appear. And usually the environmental policy submission element is usually just part of the tick box of, like, have you complied with providing all the necessary documentation, and that just gets you, through the door. But in terms of then evaluating that and evaluating other aspects beyond that, it typically doesn't make it into the evaluation criteria and any significant weighting. And again, that's an opportunity overnight, even if you start it with a relatively small weighting, that starts to appear and is being considered, and suppliers know that becomes part of the weighting, then they step up their game basically in explaining themselves and selling that part of their business. There's just immediate changes that we can make to just weighting criteria early stages to start to see that happen.
Yeah.
Dustin Hall, the it kind of links in a little bit to a later question about what's in the sort of Department of Health do, I think, a little bit in that leadership space, but kind of start emphasising to the health service providers that put a weighting criteria in that procurement document. I think it would be very sensible, as you say, maybe in the beginning, that it doesn't necessarily have to have a large weighting, because I think we've also got to be realistic about our limited knowledge and expertise around what constitutes a more environmentally sound company or piece of equipment and things. So, but at least there's something in there that we can formally say this actually added to the successful application, or this is a reason why we have rejected this application. You know, so yeah, I think it'd be a great opportunity. Yeah.
I might address this question to you, Dr. Hall, as chair of the group. Can you tell us more about the environmental management system you're developing and the role of the EMS working group?
Dustin Hall, as part of it, spawned out of the submission to this parliamentary inquiry, where it became fairly clear very early on that if we were going to do something in the space, that was the first thing required, was to actually put it together, a working group that was essentially formed. That working group was born out of the group of people who put together this submission, and that was formed initially out of a expressions of interest email that went around to staff members, and it's obviously going to be a combination of people's experience, but also their relative passion in this area as well, to make a change and make some difference. It has formed a group. At the moment, the regular meetings are once a month, and there's about 8 members at the moment, but that will probably expand fairly quickly, and that ranges from members from the executive, medical staff, scientists as well, and that's the notion that we're trying to get a group together that will represent from a leadership body through to grassroots staff members as well, that will provide those initiatives. First step was putting together this submission. The next step will be putting together an environmental management policy. And then I think it's going to be then a situation where we then start educating staff members that this exists, start giving them avenues. We've already put together a webpage on our hub about where staff members can start submitting ideas, where we start to encourage all staff members to start putting forward ideas and initiatives in branch labs and as well as tertiary centres as well. And then I think a great initiative next would be to actually adopt this Global Green and Healthy Hospitals and start putting together some of those frameworks that they've put together. I think would be a great place to start. Joe's been very supportive of this, and as has everyone I've spoken to, they've been very supportive of this. And more than just saying, oh, that's a good idea, good work, people are actually keen to be a part of it as well. So I think it'd be more a matter of finding how to make everyone a part of it, actually, rather than finding enough enthusiasm to be a part of it. A sort of an aspirational goal, as we put in our submission there, and I guess at this stage, I don't think we can say definitively we can achieve this just yet, but is this sort of formal ISO accreditation, ISO 14001, which, coming back to a bit to what we were talking about before, when you look at an organisation, okay, you've got an environmental policy, that's nice, all right, what are you actually doing about it? It's always going to be difficult to actually assess that. Some sort of formal accreditation in that space, like the ISO accreditation, I think would be a good start, whereby you... And we could even potentially start saying it's a great opportunity to lead that and sort of say, look, we have achieved this ISO accreditation, maybe even just in some pilot sites initially, but and then say that to our suppliers, et cetera, and other health service providers, we've done it. We can help you. This is the ideas and obstacles we've come across, but any reason why you can't do it now as well, being a leader in that space, I think would be great. Beyond that, we were talking yesterday about at the moment, it's sort of people who are in many other busy roles being a part of that environmental working group, but we're, and Joe and Izzy were already looking at what staff members could this start to become part of their actual formal job description to be part of this environmental working group. I don't know if you want to talk to that anymore. Or...
So, Joe Boyle, it's just two very practical things. One is that we will undoubtedly appoint someone, you know, who will solely have an environmental responsibility, sustainability responsibility, whether that's 0.5 or a full FTE, there will be somebody who, because at the moment everyone who's in the committee has obviously got their standard day job, and this is just something that they're showing some leadership and volunteering for. The other thing is that I've just gone through my first cycle of performance reviews, and what an observation is not typically good at very specific measurable objectives, and my intention is for all our principal scientists, the way our organisation works, each of the lab components that's broken down into principal scientists, is and they are the ones that really drive a lot of the processes and practices within the various work structures, is that they will have specific objectives around sustainability. Initially, those will be, you know, what are you doing in this space? What ideas have you come up with? And then ultimately, it's a real test as to are they thinking? Are they showing some leadership? And are they coming up with measurable changes? And that's going to be built into their job descriptions and their objective setting on an annual basis.
Just for the record, Ms. Abernethy would want me to just state that this is a statutory inquiry rather than a parliamentary inquiry.
Hmm.
Also that just in your written submission, you actually name the standard that you just spoke to, which is ISO 14001,
yeah.
Environmental Management Systems.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
Just going to that staff aspect, what did your recent survey reveal about staff expectations with respect to reducing emissions and environmental waste? I believe there was some enthusiasm there, and are these expectations changing?
Maybe I can initially speak to that if you like, or yeah. So it's Dustin Hall. So that was actually an idea that was put together by one of the scientists on the environmental working group to put together a survey. It was quite impressive how quickly that was put together and how many respondents we got in a very short period of time. That was all the idea was to get that done prior to the submission, but we could probably obviously expand that much further. I think probably two points that we sort of noticed is that overwhelmingly everyone was very enthused to be a part of it. Everyone was already doing things with some reducing the environmental footprint aspects of it at home. I shouldn't say everyone, but the majority of respondents were already doing things like this at home, looking to do things like it in the workplace. But also most of the respondent notions, I think, were fairly... I'm trying to think of the terminology, but they it would be things like bringing in keep cups, utilising recycle bins. So I guess a lot of respondents initially were thinking about great ideas, but it's small level ideas and things that they could immediately do, which is great, and we could help them with. But I think a big role of the environmental working group would also be in education of those the staff members to start demanding more of a much bigger organisational change. That would be the platform that we can help them with. So, yeah.
We're just into the last 5 or 10 minutes of the hearing, so I might ask you to give fairly short answers for these questions, if you don't mind. There are a couple of areas in which, you know, you said that you may not be particularly advanced looking specifically at environmental matters, but you are experts and, you know, for years and years in terms of other major initiatives around, you know, safe and quality, infection control, but also reducing testing and things like that, which have major environmental benefits, which might have been measured or might not have been, but they're still significant. So could you talk to issues relating to pathology collection, diagnostic testing that you have addressed to reduce duplication, waste, low value care and costs?
Joe Boyle. So we have an initiative, if we can call it that. I'd like to think of it more than just an initiative, a concept and what we call perfect pathology. And it's a continuum that sort of puts patient at the centre, and it talks about quality and delivery of those services. And one of those many aspects that you can draw out of that is basically that we shouldn't be doing tests that are unnecessary, and we shouldn't be taking blood, or, you know, and we shouldn't have interactions with the patient that that are, you know, just duplication. So we've been selling and promoting that concept with the HSPs. We historically, before my time, there have been a couple of initiatives around targeted areas. And for example, there was a big piece of work done at ICU at Fiona Stanley to reduce repeat testing, repeat ordering of tests, and which was successful and made significant savings in terms of the amount of cost of tests being delivered into ICU. But broadly speaking, how we're tackling this, we, as part of the fact that we're now a separate HSP, we've created a formal forum between us and the other HSPs where we sit down and we review test results, test numbers. So it's not a clinical forum, it's just looking at the cost of pathology, the number of tests, the quality issues that have cropped up, and really how that whole perfect pathology ideal is being successfully achieved. And really, we're using that forum to try and prompt discussions and projects and initiatives to do all of that, you know, and ideally reduce waste and have a basically provide a better added value service to our client groups in the HSP forum. So it's very simple. We have created the forum. We're providing data in a very regular and consistent way. Before, the interactions were random. The data was random, but we're trying to get consistency and consistency. This year's really been the first year. Last year was our first year as an HSP. So we're just getting those things off the ground. But already the discussions are bearing some fruit, and we are seeing projects to basically reduce, you know, pathology testing, unnecessary pathology testing, which is one of the core sort of elements of the initiative.
So this is my final question, and please feel free as well to offer any closing remarks. At a policy level, what role could the Department of Health play in supporting PathWest in your endeavours?
Joe Boyle, very simplistically, I think, you know, it's all about leadership now as well, and I think the department needs to show leadership. They need to have a strong and ambitious policy, if you like, in this space. I think if you accept as truth the fact that it's largely not a spoken mantra, we need to get it on the department's agenda at the system manager level, such that at important sessions, the regular leadership meetings, that environmental sustainability matter and are discussed. So I think, you know, policy is one element of that, and I think it would be more than helpful to get leadership from the top, but then to take it beyond policy to have it as a very active and regular part of, you know, what the executive team are discussing and how we're all faring in that space.
Yeah, Dustin Hall, I think very much echo what Joe has mentioned there already, that strong leadership stance, an expectation that it becomes part of the regular discussion on any matters of organisational management, procurement, whatever it be, perhaps even some changes around what we're talking about, where the procurement policies get changed such that actually environmental matters get a weighting in those. And then going forward, I'd like to reiterate, a lot of these things needn't necessarily cost much money initially, but some innovation, access to innovation funds to make some pilot projects that make some change, I think would be great initiatives, and people would be very keen to be a part of those.
Joe Boyle, just one simple thing. We have the famous WMW Health Award. It would be good to see a very strong, you know, environmental sustainability award appear as one of those awards. I think that would give it a platform, and it isn't necessarily always just about, you know, the front delivery clinical services, what goes on in the background, because much of what we talk about isn't necessarily front and centre, so it's more about the engine room or the industrial elements, and the facilities management and stuff like that. So so getting innovation and sustainability would be great awards to see on the list.
Great idea to end with. Just have to work out who the sponsor of
I'll sponsor the first one.
Thank you both for your attendance at today's hearing. A transcript of this hearing will be sent to you so that you can correct minor factual errors before it is placed on the public record. Please return the transcript within 10 working days of the date of the covering letter or email. Otherwise, it will be deemed to be correct. While you cannot amend your evidence, if you would like to explain particular points in more detail, or present further information, you can provide this as an addition to your submission to the inquiry when you return the transcript. Once again, thank you very much for your efforts.
Thank you.